What's up, everybody? It's the Viewing Angles Podcast, also known as the only movie podcast on the face of the earth. Quote me on that. Send your complaints to Brian Williams, care of MSNBC. I'm your A-host, Dan Leo, and with me, as always, is the B-host,
Robert Mecki, a.k.a. your dad.
A.k.a. your dad. Yep. He's all of our dads. He's the almighty father.
If you want to know where I went when I left to go get cigarettes, I left to go start a podcast.
Yeah. I like the idea that that a dad would leave to go get cigarettes, and he didn't go to 7-Eleven, though. Like, he went to, like, Vietnam and started, like, a tobacco farm and started rolling cigarettes, started his own empire, and then he comes back and he's, like, shares the wealth.
Because he was tired of the Americans taxing. He was tired of that sin tax, that vice tax.
Yeah, I think it's called an excise tax, Robert.
Is it? I've heard people call it multiple things, but I like sin tax because you could kind of turn it into a pun.
Yeah. Syntax. We'll figure that out later. All right, well, let's get right into these bad boys. There's lots of fun stuff coming along. We're reviewing mid-90s later today, the Jonah Hill writing directing movie shot in a with a one of those viewfinders.
Yeah, one of those 90s viewfinders. It's also known as it's the film adaptation of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, let's be real.
If only. So let's go to the box office right away. I think it's the same as last week. We got, we have it down. I can see it right down there. That's what last week was. Isn't this fun? Halloween coming in at 31 million. It's a 58% drop, but it's still making a lot of money. And then at number two, A Star Is Born at 14 million, a 26% drop. And then Venom, Still kicking away at 10 million, and it's at a 41% drop, which is not enough. Enough at all.
I have noticed, though. I was just talking to my parents today, and they told me that they had just seen Venom this weekend. Which, one, I feel kind of bad, but they were also like, they liked it more than I expected them to. And a lot of it is just because they were like, yeah, well, Tom Hardy was just fun. And I'm like, okay, that's fair. Like, Tom Hardy is super fun in this movie. There's so much potential for this movie to be better. And I think that's why I was so upset with it.
Right. Anytime I see anything about Venom, I just keep rehashing all of the things I didn't like about it. But even when I went to see mid-90s, a guy who was in one of my improv classes came out and he was like, oh, man, what are you here to see? I'm here to see mid-90s. And he's like, haven't heard of that. And I was like, well, what are you seeing? And he's like, we just saw Venom. And I was like, oh, how'd you like it? He's like, like the fact that he was going to see Venom, like, 4 weeks after it premiered or whatever.
Yeah. Like, man, this movie has legs. It doesn't have, like, the legs aren't as long as A Star Is Born. I think Star Is Born's position is kind of crazy right now.
Oh, it's got that word of mouth. I mean, it's the type of movie that your mom would want to watch. Like, you feel okay recommending it to your mom, which is primo Oscar bait plus money.
Yeah. It's definitely also just all the Lady Gaga fans are going to be spewing marketing for the shit 24/7. She calls them little monsters?
Isn't that what they're called? I don't know. I haven't been a Lady Gaga fan really since her first album.
Yeah.
Kind of dropped off when it got weird.
Yeah. As soon as she put on the meat dress, I was like, okay.
Like, I like paparazzi and poker face.
Yeah.
I can jam out to that.
I don't know what your newest albums are going for, but.
Yeah. She's got talent. And, that's all I got to say about that.
I feel like the position of Star Is Born staying at number two and making this much money for this long, this is guaranteed getting nominated for Best Picture.
Oh, definitely.
It's making money and it's Oscar bait. That's a pretty rare combination.
Right, but look at these, like, total gross numbers. You can see that, and this is just the U.S. alone. Halloween has made $126 million. It's been open for 2 weekends, and A Star Is Born has only made $148. So, I mean, I think that means that A Star Is Born has been, like, sitting pretty at number two.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it'll get knocked down eventually, but it hasn't really been making that much money week over week. It's just been, like, steadily, like, keeping up.
You know what makes me sad, though, is that movies like First Man are getting left in the dust because they should have cast Lady Gaga as Neil Armstrong's wife instead of Claire Foy.
That would have been a lot weirder of a movie. Probably wouldn't have been that bad.
No, I mean, Lady Gaga can clearly act, so.
Yeah, I mean, she's definitely like, her singing is the best part of that move about that performance, you know?
Yeah.
Not to say her performance is bad, but it's like, the fact that she can clearly convey emotion through her singing is really like, that's what was doing it.
Mm-hmm. I think we're going to get a lot more big releases in October now after numbers like this.
Yeah.
This is this is a pretty groundbreaking month for movies in October, because like we had two movies this month alone that almost broke the one did break the October record, and then the second one almost broke it again.
Right, which is bananas. Like, Halloween would have broken the record if it wasn't for Venom.
Yeah. And I hope Halloween's success, like, I know like I wasn't too hot on it, but I hope that its continued success really means that we're going to see more R-rated blockbuster films.
Well, did you hear that LeBron James is executive producing a reboot of the third reboot of Friday the 13th?
I have heard about that. And that's like probably the most what the fuck news of the week.
I hope LeBron plays Jason. I think that's the way they could do it, really. Because that would be terrifying. LeBron is fucking gigantic. Yeah. If he was Jason, I mean, that's way scarier than some dude in a hockey mask. Obviously, LeBron would have to wear a hockey mask, but...
No, I want them to replace the hockey mask with those, like face masks they have in basketball to prevent, like, broken noses. You should just wear one of those.
Oh, like the kind that Joel Embiid wears?
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be scary.
Instead of using machete, I want him just to throw fucking sneakers at people until they're dead.
Just throw basketballs at him.
Yeah.
I'm all in it.
He's
all
also right. Like, man, so LeBron is like, he's really breaking into the Hollywood scene because, you know, I think that Space Jam 2 sequel is still on track with LeBron James set to star. I'm pretty sure they released a teaser image a couple weeks ago. So that's like... still something that's happening, and man, I don't know what the fuck that's gonna be like. That's gonna be so weird.
It'll be weird, but honestly, like, LeBron is funny. Like,
he's way funnier than Michael Jordan. And
right,
Hitler-ass mustache. Trainwreck showed that. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. LeBron was. It's kind of like, oh man, this guy's funny, and he's like one of the best basketball players of all time.
I know, dude. Fuck people with talent.
Yeah, I hate that, man.
Just start a podcast like the rest of us, LeBron. Jesus.
Yeah, come on, jeez.
But yeah, so if he does this and he does end up producing the next Friday the 13th, like, what the fuck is that going to be like? I'm excited, but I wonder who he'd like. Who would he get to direct?
And Ryan Coogler,
dude, with Michael B. Jordan in the lead.
Yeah, he'd be the antagonist.
Yeah. Oh, so he'd be.
LeBron
Jason?
Will be the lead. Come on.
What? LeBron? You think LeBron is going to act in... You think LeBron is going to be in his Friday the 13th movie?
Oh, no. I'm talking about Space Jam still.
Oh, okay.
I hope he's in his Friday the 13th, though. I hope he plays Jason.
Dude, if he plays Jason, that'd be hilarious. But I think it'd also be really funny if he was, like, the first guy to die. Like, I hope this reboot is super self-aware.
Yeah, I mean, that's where Friday the 13th needs to be, I think. I mean,
yeah,
hopefully...
I think that's why Halloween is so successful, is because it has that undercurrent of humor throughout it. And it's not it's not like those Michael Bay reboots of Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street that take themselves way too seriously.
Right.
Because I think that's like something that modern producers forget about the 70s and 80s classic horror films, is they're pretty funny. I mean, Halloween, not as much as Nightmare on Elm Street, but like... Freddy Krueger has like he's got those one-liners that just pop off every time he kills somebody, and they're pretty hilarious.
Yeah, but I think that's also the pitfall of that series, is that towards the end of it,
it gets nuts.
Yeah, it becomes like
bullshit.
Who is this guy? Yeah,
yeah. That movie needs a reboot. But I was saying earlier, I would love to see a reboot of Nightmare on Elm Street with Cary Fukunaga directing. I think that would be amazing. Because I wanted to see his It forever. Like, I was super hyped when they announced that he was directing It. And the director they got to replace him, Andy Muschietti, he did a good job. I think It is a really good horror film. But,
yeah,
man, I would have loved to see Cary Fukunaga's vision for that movie.
What? Wasn't there, like, some crazy thing that was like it was creative differences that like Cary Fukunaga like wanted to do something like really fucked up, and they're like, I don't know about this, guys. Like,
yeah, he probably wanted the fucking the gangbang scene from the original novel. But I was reading part of a script too that got leaked, and apparently he wanted to delve more into like the history of Derry. Yeah. And go into like how like when the settlers were there, like it was already like feeding off of them.
Yeah, because in the book, which I haven't read, but there's like little asides. There's like every few chapters, yeah. There's like a here like this time period in Derry or whatever Derry.
Yeah, Derry, Maine.
Yeah, that they go into the history and like here's when Pennywise is still fucking shit up.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. There's a reason that book is fucking over 1,000 pages long.
Yeah, I want to read it before the next one comes out.
Yeah, I feel like if you haven't read it before the next one comes out, if what they're saying is to be believed, the next one is going to be weird as fuck. Because part two of it is when it really starts getting crazy. Like, that's when you start having cosmic turtles battling these, like, Lovecraftian entities.
Yeah. Interesting.
And, Oh, dude, I'm so excited. One, I love the cast of it, too. Now that they announced
Bill
the entire
Hader,
cast.
James McAvoy, Jessica Chastain.
So good. And they said that they're going to have the ritual of Chud in the movie, which is...
I don't know what that means, and I'm too afraid to ask.
I'm not going to tell you, because if it's accurate to the novel and it's in the movie, I cannot wait to see how many people are just, like, staring in awe and confusion at the screen at what is happening.
Have you read the book?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have it with you?
I have it on my Kindle. Did you want to borrow it? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess I'll have to go to the library now, like some socialist.
Dude, you can get that book is like 20 something years old. You can get a copy from Barnes and Noble for like $8.
What's a Barnes and Noble, Robert? This is the future.
My God.
Welcome.
Go to Borders. R.I.P.
I wonder if you can even search in Amazon and it'll show up.
Yeah, just buy it off Amazon.
It comes at night. It trailer. See, this is it. A novel. Oh, $15. Maybe.
Yeah, it's 1,000 pages. 1,000 quality pages.
Yeah, exactly. That's a commitment. The Kindle edition is only $2 less. That doesn't make any sense.
Hey, they got to make a profit. You know, they're paying their workers $15 an hour now.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh, jeez. Fascist. All right, let's go into the news. Enough about that. All right,
yeah,
so
enough
we're
about
gonna...
that news. Let's talk about the real news.
Yeah, exactly. We got some highs and lows. Here is the first high: is that Martin Scorsese is teaming up with his longtime muse and recent Academy Award winner Leonardo DiCaprio for a new movie called
Thinking of Leo D as Scorsese's muse.
Yeah, ooh, I like them. I like Scorsese just painting Leo.
Yeah.
You know? Butt naked in front of a bowl of fruit.
He's laying on a piano. Scorsese's like sipping champagne and drawing him. Like,
yeah, it's 3 a.m. Christmas Eve. Yeah.
They're sharing a cigarette.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Send me to the printers. So they're teaming up for this new movie. It's going to be, I don't know what it's going to be called necessarily. I don't think it's been revealed, but the title of the book is called Killers of the Flower Moon. It takes place in 1920s Oklahoma, and it's the set piece is kind of, it's the birth of the FBI, and there's this town in Oklahoma that recently discovered oil underneath their town, and they're capitalizing on it. Business is booming, but then everyone in the town starts getting murdered one by one, and the FBI comes in to investigate. So that's all I really know about it. I don't want to read in more into it because it sounds pretty messed up, and I want to see Scorsese do that.
So
but,
is it a
I'm pretty
Western?
Excited for it. Is it a Western?
Yeah.
I mean, in the most literal definition, I guess, like it's in
Oklahoma.
Well,
because like the FBI wasn't born until, when was the FBI born? What year? Do you remember?
Do I remember? I don't think I ever knew that.
I thought you saw J. Edgar.
No, I saw Public Enemies.
Oh, okay.
Well, I just Googled FBI and accidentally went to the FBI homepage, so now I'm
on
a watch
list.
Now.
Whoops. Hey, maybe they'll listen to our podcast, you know?
1908, apparently.
Okay, so that could be like, I think it'll probably have a Western aesthetic.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I wonder if Leo will be playing like an FBI agent. I assume so. It'll probably be like a Shutter Island type vibe.
Oh, yeah.
which I'm into that aesthetic more. I feel like Scorsese has not really ventured into that territory since then, and that would be interesting to revisit.
I don't know, man. Did you ever see Hugo?
Yeah, I forgot how many lobotomies were in Hugo.
How many dead wives there were.
Yeah, exactly. Baby, why are you all wet? The best line in Shutter Island is after, like, the kids or whatever, and she's, like, saying, like, I'm so glad you're here. He's like, if you love me at all, you will shut the fuck up. Like,
yeah.
If you, wait, no, it's like, baby, if you ever love me, please shut the hell up. Like,
yeah, yeah. Man. God, though, I'm excited, though, for this. I like Scorsese jumping back into... it's probably not going to be, like, a full-on horror film.
It's going to be, like, noir-y. But,
yeah, noir, psychological thriller type film. And, I mean, I liked... Don't get me wrong. I liked all of his recent work. But I'm excited to see him jump back into the genre.
Yeah, me too. I'm pretty excited. I'm... Honestly, like, anything Scorsese does, I'll watch. So
I want Scorsese to make a sequel to Taxi Driver, you know, one of those 40 years later situations with just old ass Robert De Niro, like, dealing with the fame that the original Taxi Driver brought him.
And he hunts down the MAGA bomber.
Yeah. He's just going around killing trolls on Reddit. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's what I want.
Oh, man. I mean, I feel like who's the writer behind that again from First Reformed and Taxi Driver and all those movies?
Paul Schrader.
I feel like that's the movie he wants to write.
The sequel to Taxi Driver?
Yes. He wants to take down social media.
Yeah, I don't know if he does, if he's doing enough coke for that anymore. I think he's probably too sober
maybe
to write that sequel.
Maybe it'll be his last hurrah.
Yeah, and he'll OD as he finishes the last page.
They'll find it like they'll find it in his clutched hands with like a little bit of cocaine on them.
Yeah, in rigor mortis, and they'll have to pry it out of him.
His magnum opus.
I can't wait. All right, well, let's move on to the next sadder news, and then we got some middling news.
Yeah, some we don't know what it's gonna be like.
Right. So George Miller, famous director, known for Happy Feet 2,
exactly,
and the Mad Max series. And other things, I imagine. I don't know really what else he's done.
All I know is what he was supposed to do.
Right. So, he directed, you know, Mad Max Fury Road. I think one of, like, the best action films of all time. Super enjoyable.
Yeah.
I loved it so much. I'd watch it right now if I could. And he apparently had, like, an idea for, three more sequel ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they're now on hold. Like, they're all on hold while he's going to work on some other things.
Well, do you know why they're on hold?
Because of his dispute with Warner Brothers, right?
Yeah, the copyright dispute.
Yeah, do you know any more about that, Rob?
Only that, you know, it's multiple people claiming that they own the rights to this, and apparently it hasn't been settled yet. So
yeah, I think George Miller said he's like, there's like millions of dollars that he's owed from Warner Brothers for like owning Mad Max and stuff like that. So yeah. it's really upsetting because he is such a great action director, and just give him money. Just give him the money. Let him do the thing. Cause you know, it's going to be about Charlie's Theron and it's going to be baller again. Like, it's going to be so cool. He's proven himself.
Is on DC's, I guess that's still Warner Brothers, but he's on DC's shortlist to direct the Man of Steel sequel.
Oh, really?
Which, holy shit. That would be amazing. I think there's actually, he did a spec script for Justice League as well. But this was like before like the DC Universe Justice League that we got. I think this was back in like 2008. He wrote a spec script for Justice League. And goddamn, I wish we could have seen that happen. But I also know that he's on the shortlist for Man of Steel 2, which I think would be amazing. I want to see what he can do with the superhero genre. That'd be so cool.
Yeah, no, I think that would be cool. I wish there was a way to like read unproduced like spec scripts that are owned by studios.
Yeah.
Just like, cause you know, like all your favorite writers and directors, they all have signed up for like things, and there's so many unproduced scripts that were paid like thousands of dollars. It's like, hey, write this like cool thing. And then they did it and they're like, this is cool, but not the direction we're going into right now.
Yeah, we're gonna produce Bright instead, and we paid $1.2 million just for the property for the script.
What? Did they... Wait, is Bright based on a previous property?
No. Bright was written by Max Landis, which is hilarious in itself.
Who the hell is Max Landis?
He's the son of John Landis, and he's also the writer of Chronicle, which I like, and American Ultra, which was...
Okay.
And then Victor Frankenstein, which is not good, and then Bright, which is shit. So he's just been on a downward path ever since he sold his first script. But yeah, it's still historically the most expensive script ever purchased. I think Netflix paid like $2 to $3 million for the script. Just the script.
God, I wish I could work at Netflix because I have 2 brain cells and that's double what everybody at Netflix has.
Yeah, like I bet you instead of stock bonuses, they just have Coke bonuses there.
Right. If they had Coke bonuses, the Netflix library would be way more interesting. They're probably taking like downers. They're probably like taking Xanax. Like,
yeah, taking Xanax and binging their own content and falling asleep. Yeah.
Yeah. We just
want material that's going to put you to sleep. Hold the dark. Let's make that movie.
Yeah, let's. I mean, they've been doing OK, but still like they're starting to get. But they're every time I better. Watch, even the best stuff is still like, wow, what a great TNT show. Like,
right. Yeah.
There's nothing like HBO level. I mean, I guess maybe like.
The
Crown.
No, I think the show's good, but the movies mostly trash.
Yeah, 90% trash.
Yeah, but the shows are great. I'm very excited for Sabrina. I love Daredevil season 3.
Sabrina is pretty good. I like Sabrina so far. I've seen the first 2 episodes.
Ooh, I need to start it. Maniac is fucking amazing. I loved Maniac.
I'm 4 episodes in and I'm digging it.
Dude, the soundtrack is so good.
Yeah, it's all good. All right. So the main thing is just I want more Mad Max and they're not going to give it to me. So really, yeah, Warner Brothers, who's losing now? It's me. Just me.
It's just Dan.
It's
I don't
just
care about
me.
Mad Max, so it's just Dan.
It's only me.
Who'd you piss off at Warner Brothers?
Which Warner is the tall one?
Do you think are there any descendants of the Warner Brothers that are actually in charge of that company anymore?
Probably isn't it like because like MGM is still run by like a Goldwyn, right?
I thought MGM's entertainment division dissolved. I thought they were like only hotels and shit now.
Oh,
but you could be right. I don't know.
I feel like, yeah, I haven't seen The Lion in a while.
Yeah. Even in the most recent Bond film, they didn't have The Lion.
Really? Oh, I didn't
and
even.
Yeah. MGM Studios isn't a thing at Disney World anymore.
Oh, well, that's sad.
So sad. Yeah, I don't know. Goldwyn does sound familiar.
Yeah.
Samuel Goldwyn. No, that's the original guy. I don't know who his fucking kids are.
Yeah. I mean, who cares, really? The point is we got one other piece of news. And Robert, this is your news. You talk about it.
Yeah. So Disney has announced that they are going to try to reboot the Pirates franchise, which one, I'm surprised that it took them this long to try to do this. I guess they're trying to get as much money out of Dan or Johnny Depp as possible.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing about the reboot is it's being penned by the Deadpool scribes.
Which is their names, interesting.
But they wrote Deadpool, so you probably know their work.
Yeah, I mean, Pirates reboot, I don't even like the Pirates franchise is off the rails for me entirely. Like, but I felt like the only reason to watch it was Johnny Depp being crazy. Like,
yeah, I think...
Those movies don't really have any other appeal besides like watching Johnny Depp being like, I'm a pirate.
I don't know. I think the first 3 are still a fantastic trilogy. And I think a lot of it is due because like I love Gore Verbinski and I love his directing style and just like how fucking weird he's able to get. And the fact that Disney didn't say no to a lot of the shit that he wanted to put in the movie. I think it's pretty impressive.
Those movies are weird and surprising that like Disney made them.
At least the first 3 are, but 4 and 5. Are hot trash. Those movies do not deserve to be watched.
I have not seen them. I can't.
You don't need to. But 1 through 3, I think are great. Johnny Depp is great, obviously, and I think he was the surprise of that franchise because this was back in 2003 when Johnny Depp wasn't like as much of a meme as he is now.
He was a serious actor. Yeah.
Yeah, he was a serious actor, and they're like, oh, this is a really good performance. And I think that the original trilogy actually does a really good job of like. Adding depth to him as a character and revealing that he actually has a pretty tragic backstory only for all that to get wiped away with the sequels and just have him be like, oh, he's a drunk pirate the whole time. He's not actually smart. He's just lucky, which is what I think that the first three films did really well, is show that he's actually very intelligent. And most of the stuff he's doing is just like a facade he's putting on.
Yeah.
To get away with all of his piracy. But
yeah,
I think I'm curious to see if they still, if they try to rewrite Jack Sparrow and just have like a different actor play them, or if they're going to go for like, I'm very curious to see what direction they go in for these films.
I feel like they'll have to do something completely different because Jack Sparrow is so much a part of like Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
And like the fact it's also, it's surprising, like the John, all this like studio still like putting their stuff into Johnny Depp, considering like the allegations like against him.
Yeah.
And like I read a while back with like the crimes of like Grindelwald, like where everyone was going against him and being like, how could you do this? Like Disney or whatever.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And then they were like, well, we have access to certain things that are, let us be okay with this, because there are unsealed documents about like this stuff.
Well, because like, didn't Amber Heard try to like sue him and fail?
Well, yeah, it was, she was like suing him for like, or alleged that he abused her. And there, you know, there was like a big like People cover story about like that showed like her like injuries and stuff like that. And then like Johnny Depp came back and is like, no, 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 that's not what happened. Like, you abused me. And then it was like, what? Like, everyone's like, okay, like, doubt it, dude. And then
that's what I heard. But like, that's kind of what I think is true. Like, I've heard more people talking about Amber Heard being abusive and manipulative than Johnny Depp was to
her. Which would be an insane turn of events. Because
and also,
there's
nobody
like
would believe it.
Oh, yeah. Because it's like, yeah. I mean, I don't know anything about Amber Heard, really. I haven't seen her in hardly any movies.
Yeah, same.
But it's I don't know. It's pretty crazy. And because there's like a lawsuit going on right now, and it's about to like start. I think Amber Heard is like, I'm going, like, we're going all in for this.
Yeah.
And Johnny Depp and his lawyers are like, yeah, let's do it. And so we can get our documents like into the public record so everyone can see it.
Yeah.
And the fact that it hasn't like gone on yet, I'm kind of like, ooh, this is like, what is going on here?
Yeah. But apparently, like, I've been reading too that everybody that's worked with Johnny Depp says that he's like pretty professional on set, and that he's normally he's a nice guy to everybody on set. He's not like Christian Bale and abusing the crew members or anything.
Right. Yeah. So
but, he clearly has personal issues at home, as the Rolling Stone article highlighted a couple months ago.
Yeah.
But like, with as much turmoil as he's going through, I could kind of see why he's spending $1,000 a month on wine.
Oh my God, what an idiot.
But I mean, hey, if you have that kind of money, like,
which
fuck
he
it.
Apparently
like,
doesn't
I can only
anymore.
Imagine how much money he's getting from Crimes of Grindelwald.
Oh yeah, he's probably trying to get positive again. Like, he's
And also just how much royalties he's still getting from the Pirates franchise. Like,
right. Because they're probably using his image like everywhere and all that, like.
Yeah.
Unless he's got a horrible agent, he's got to be rolling in it. Which maybe he does have an awful, maybe he had an awful agent. Maybe that's what all of this is from.
Yeah. Whatever his agent was that got him hired on Mordecai. Yeah. I feel like he really is trying. Like, that's the thing. Is like, I still respect Johnny Depp just because, like, no matter what he's in, it seems like he's actually trying in his performances, which is more than I think you could say for a lot of actors that have reached the level of fame that he has.
Oh, yeah. He's going all in. And even, you know, as recently as Black Mass, where he plays Whitey Bulger, he's
disappears
pretty good
into his roles, which is like the fact that he is still a triple A list actor and can disappear into his roles like that. Like, the fact that Johnny Depp plays someone as eccentric as what's his name? Captain Jack Sparrow, and is able to switch it to someone like Grindelwald, who I feel like are completely different characters, both personality wise and aesthetically, is impressive. But I feel like, I don't know. Everybody gives him shit because he's a living meme at this point.
Yeah. So many bracelets.
Yeah. I will also give him credit for his role in 21 Jump Street. As the continuation of his character from the 21 Jump Street TV series.
Yeah, deep cover.
Yeah, holy shit.
what a great cameo. That's like the best type of cameo.
Yeah, I feel like that's why I like Johnny Depp so much, is like, he clearly doesn't take what he's doing that seriously either. Like, he's not Daniel Day-Lewis and he knows it.
Yeah, exactly. He likes to act.
Yeah, he likes having fun characters. Also, shout out to Sweeney Todd. I love Sweeney Todd.
Oh, yeah. I will have vengeance. Yeah, what a tight.
God, so good. Kind of want to watch that for Halloween now.
Yeah, hey, do it. I dare you.
All right, dare accepted.
You heard it here first, folks. So we're going to moving on to the movie review part of the podcast. We will be talking about mid-90s, the coming-of-age story directed by Jonah Hill, starring a bunch of professional skateboarders, Lucas Hedges, and Catherine Waterson. Let's go kind of right into it. I'll do my initial thoughts, I guess.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious to hear what you have to say, because we didn't talk about this movie at all after we saw it.
This is usually we kind of shoot the shit before the podcast about things that aren't video games, but we were just talking about video games before this. We usually talk about the movie, kind of get our thoughts together, but this is actually the first conversation we're having about the movie. And what I'll say about the movie is that I liked it, but I liked it more from the promise it showed that Jonah Hill can handle, like he can direct and he can kind of write, but he doesn't have a great control over narrative. I felt the movie was kind of narratively unfulfilling, but he hit some pretty good notes in there. The real highlight for me in this movie is Lucas Hedges, who is, for me, like, this is the movie where he's kind of like, oh, this guy can, like, act, you know, he can do any, like, character. Because in the previous movies, he's been in so many Oscar, like, nominated movies that it's kind of funny.
Has he won an Oscar yet?
No.
Has he been nominated for an Oscar yet?
I don't know if he's been nominated yet, but it seems like his niche is, like, Oscar movies. Like,
yeah, and I feel like that's the thing. That's kind of my problem with Lucas Hedges, is that I feel like so many of his roles are so similar, and they're not, like, there has yet to be a movie up until mid-90s that he really sold me in his performance, where I feel like in this movie, playing the older brother, he really disappeared into that character. Like, this is the first movie I've watched with Lucas Hedges in it where I didn't just see Lucas Hedges.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I felt like was so great about it. His performance, at least in it, that he plays against type very well.
Yeah.
And really goes into it and gives it his all. I'm like, wow, this guy is actually a good actor.
Yeah.
He's not just being well cast in these kind of weird small roles.
Yeah, he's a performer. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
It's a shame that it took him like, what, 4 or 5 movies to get to this point.
Right. I mean, I'm sure that for most people, they're like, oh, that's that guy who's in those good movies. Like,
yeah.
Not a lot of people are thinking about him.
Everybody's like, all the movies that he's in are good, but I don't think that his performance is the reason that they're good. And like, everybody points to Manchester by the Sea, and I do think it's better than most of his performances, but I still don't think that, like, to me, Casey Affleck is what sold that movie.
Definitely.
But shout out to how much Lucas Hedges loves orange juice in this movie without explanation. Like,
I hope he just like showed up on set and they're like, what do you got there? It's like, it's a jug of orange juice.
Yeah. And he's just like, they get him in the costume and he's like, I'm not going to let go of it. Like,
yeah. And Jonah Hill's just like, sure, dude, whatever.
The scene towards the end of the movie where he pulls out 2 fucking orange juice packets from his jeans.
My theater lost it.
Dude, yeah, I lost it too. Like, this was supposed to be a super serious, like, moment in the film, like a super heart-touching moment. Like, oh, he's connecting with his brother. But, like, I couldn't stop fucking laughing at the fact that this kid just pulled 2 giant orange juice cartridges out of his jean pockets.
Hey, jeans were baggy in the 90s, man.
Yeah, I get it. Like, man. Okay, so I guess that's a good segue into what I liked about this movie. I think the aesthetic, like, Jonah Hill clearly put a lot of effort into capturing the aesthetic of the 90s in this film.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
I think it shows. But I feel like it's almost overwhelming. Like, so much of this movie just feels like it was all about showing off that Jonah Hill knows what the 90s were, and that it felt like a lot of nostalgia bait to me.
I mean, it's called mid-90s, Robert. Like,
yeah, I know. But, like, you can have, like, so I think Boyhood did this better.
Like, yeah. Oh, definitely. Because Boyhood didn't try. I feel like Boyhood didn't really try and do nostalgia. It kind of was like, where are we at in this? So it comes off less as like nostalgia and more of like a document of it. This comes off much more nostalgic.
Yeah. And again, like you were saying, I think the performances in this movie are all pretty great. And the fact that there are like most of them are coming from like professional skaters who had no previous acting experience, I think is very impressive.
They're all professional skateboarders or something like that.
Yeah, so they did all their own stunts. And apparently Jonah Hill said he found them just like roaming the streets of LA and being like, hey, y'all want to act in a movie? I'm like, all right, I guess that's one way to not pay a casting director.
Well, Nicole Smith, the Ray, who's the kind of leader of the group, he's actually like a pro skateboarder and was involved with Odd Future for a while. He was like around those guys. So there is some kind of like rhyme or reason to why people were cast. And
Sonny Sufjek. Yeah.
Yeah. He was in Killing of Sacred Deer. And he's actually
Was he the kid in Killing of a Sacred Deer? Colin Farrell's kid?
I think he was.
Wow.
Huh. Yeah, and he was also the kid in God of War. He's Atreus.
He's the voice of Atreus?
Yeah, the voice and mocap.
Atreus! That's fucking weird. Atreus. I have no idea.
Yeah, so he's done some stuff. Boy. And apparently he's a pretty good skateboarder too, so.
That's what I heard. I heard that he's like way better at skating than the character was in the film. And they kept on having to redo shots because like he has the muscle memory of a skater. So whenever he would like try to fail a trick, he would just automatically do it and then be like, oh, God damn it.
Yeah, he was actually really good. And the music also was Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, which they're always
the
like a highlight.
Is great. I think the music in this movie is great.
I think the big issue is with the narrative.
The narrative, and I think that the directing style, like I know a lot of people are saying like, oh, this is like Jonah Hill's calling card for his future as a director. I don't know if I'm sure about that. Like one of the big things I noticed from the very beginning is they use the 4:3 aspect ratio, I think, to little to no effect. I feel like that's such a superficial framing decision because it's not like he wasn't framing shots, I think, specifically for that aspect ratio. And it's not like they didn't have widescreen films in the 90s. Like, unless he's expecting everybody to watch this film on like an old CRT TV with the proper aspect ratio. Mm-hmm. I don't know why he did it, because it's not even like that stylistic of a choice like Wes Anderson does with Hill's films or Paul Schrader with First Reformed. Mm-hmm. Like, this movie just felt like there were shots that were framed at 16:9 that he just cut off parts for to put it into a 4:3 aspect ratio. And it, I don't know, that whole aesthetic decision just felt kind of empty to me.
I think it was there to give it a skate vibe, like a skate film vibe, which at that point, why not just do the whole thing in fisheye, you know?
Right. Like, and yeah,
not enough fisheye in this movie. That's really my big issue is.
Yeah. We needed way more fisheye. We needed way more Radiance Machine. This another thing too that I feel like this movie only really had one likable character, and I think that was Ray. I didn't really care too much about any of the other characters.
I think they come off as very flawed and very unlikable in specific ways, not in the same way as like Stevie, the main character, the 13-year-old kid. He doesn't come off as well as Elsie does in eighth grade.
Oh, yeah.
Elsie Fisher. He comes off more as like a more directionless and less redeeming qualities, but also just kind of like a kid trying to figure it out and really being pulled along the current of his life, you know? Yeah. I think this movie has less to say than a movie like Eighth Grade or Lady Bird. I think this movie is kind of more, it feels more like a documentary with actors, like one long dramatized sequence.
Yeah. And I get that it's like supposed to be a slice of life film where these characters don't necessarily have arcs. And, you know, I'd argue that none of the characters in the movie have arcs, which I think can be, you know, narratively aggravating.
No, I agree. But I think that's the biggest, that's my biggest issue with, yeah, definitely.
But, like, I think you could, like, there are movies like this. I think, like, Lady Bird is a good example, or Eighth mm-hmm. Grade 2, that have, they're these slice of life slash coming of age films that are able to present an emotional arc to the audience for this character and still feel like an accurate representation of the time and the mindset that you were when you were in that age.
Yes.
And I didn't really get that from this movie. This movie felt kind of meandering and a little bit messy to me, but the performances were great. The soundtrack is great. I think the direction too, like, again, I talked about his decision to use a 4x3 to little to no effect, but I also feel like there wasn't a whole lot of, like, I'm not looking for like big set pieces when it comes to direction, especially in a film right. like this, but it still just felt kind of meandering to me. And
it's only
it's
like 84 minutes
film,
too,
which is, that was like the most shocking part about it to me, is like the movie ended and then I walked out of the theater. I was like, holy shit, this was less than like, this was under 90 minutes.
Yeah, because it kind of feels like the whole time, very slice of life. It kind of felt more like a Richard Linklater movie than anything else, but it felt like it didn't realize it was being a Richard Linklater movie. You know, if you yeah. haven't seen Richard Linklater, it's like movies like Before Sunrise, Dazed and Confused, Slacker, Bernie, very slice of life, almost like Boyhood. Yeah, we were just mentioning movies yeah. that thrive in the rejection of a conventional narrative and their full yeah. adherence to slice of life. Because they basically kind of say right off the bat, like, hey, there's not going to be big moments in this because it's going to be all the little moments make up what is actually life. And yeah. this feels like it's trying to go for that, but also trying to work in some like higher level stuff that never really gets off the ground.
Yeah. And I think the thing that sets Richard Linklater's films apart is that one, his dialogue is like, you know, tiers above what Jonah Hill was able to write. And again, this yeah. is Jonah Hill's first script, so I don't want to harp on it too much, but he understands that he's able to form fleshed out characters through that dialogue and keep it engaging at the same time, having like, you know, multiple philosophical conflicts going on, even though nothing major is happening in the movie. Whereas in this film, like, there are, like, it seems like Jonah Hill wanted to have those types of conflicts between, like, you know, middle class skaters, I guess, in the 90s, and then like the lower class skaters, and having them like lash out at people because of their home life, but they just get it, like, they just get a passing mention, like they get like
yeah.
two lines of dialogue about like, oh, his home life sucks, and then they just like never go back to it.
Yeah, exactly. We're really supposed to focus on Stevie and his brother, and that's kind of vaguely alluded. I mean, it's shown, but there's no kind of statement being made about it.
Yeah,
it
feels, that's the thing about this movie, is like, I know that not every movie has to make like a definitive statement about something, but this movie felt like it just had literally nothing to say.
It felt like it didn't have anything to say. Yeah, I agree with you in that. And it feels almost like an exercise in, you know, which I applaud Jonah Hill for making. This movie is sincere. I'd say that's one of its biggest pluses. It is a very sincere movie to a fault.
Yeah.
In how it wants to portray life in the mid 90s.
Yeah. And I think he drew a lot of that from his personal life.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's really what vibed with me on this. If you can't connect to this movie on an emotional level, it's not good. You're not going to like it at all. And I was able to connect with a good amount of it, like, emotionally. But there are still other parts where I'm like, this is just done in an, like, I get what he's trying to do, but it really just kind of feels like the character Fourth Grade, who's filming everything and, you know, he's making something. It feels like it's his movie. Like, well, I'll just film these people doing this stuff.
Yeah.
And that'll be a movie. It gave me almost like a hope of like, oh, I could have made this movie.
Yeah.
You could have made this movie.
Which, I mean, maybe that is the message. Maybe Jonah Hill wrote the character Fourth Grade as a stand-in for himself or something, but
yeah, I think he's probably an amalgamation of all those characters.
Yeah.
To some extent. You know, are there, you know, there are people that he knew when he was a kid. I guess my like big point is I would not really recommend this movie to anybody. I think this will only be interesting if Jonah Hill ends up writing, directing something like really amazing down the line.
Yeah.
To see like where you can draw like, oh, this will be like an imperfect film that you'll be able to see traces of in future great works.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's, you know, depending on what he does in the future, this could become a film where you can like extrapolate the themes that he's going to have going forward in his filmmaking career. And I think, you know, it depending on how good of a director, writer he ends up being, this could be like, you know, Jonah Hill's Following. So no, Christopher Nolan, his first feature film was Following. Not a lot of people love it, but I know there's a small cult that likes to view it and analyze it and like kind of point out where the inception of his certain themes were from that movie. So yeah, we'll see where this goes. But I think as his debut film, both as writer and director, it's okay. Like, I didn't hate it. I was just extremely underwhelmed by what I saw.
Yeah, it's promising, but not satisfying.
Yeah,
I would say.
Yeah. And again, performances are great. Soundtrack is great. If you're really, you know, searching for that 90s nostalgia, this is the movie for you. But I don't know if you want like a full narrative, like emotionally impactful experience. I don't think you're going to find it here.
Yeah, I would say there are better movies that do this. And the real
watch Boyhood.
Yeah, I watch Boyhood. It's like an hour longer, but feels half an hour shorter.
Yeah,
the real standouts are Lucas Hedges, Nicole Smith. We didn't really talk about Catherine Waterson, but she's always amazing. I love Catherine Waterson.
I love Catherine Waterson too, and she also wasn't really in this film that much.
Yeah, but you could tell like whenever she's in the scene, like, oh, here's a real actor. Like like she is all in.
Yeah, I love Catherine Waterson.
Yeah, gotta go watch Inherent Vice again.
Ooh, man, she's like unrecognizable in that movie.
Yeah, I mean,
she's
that
also
is
the best part of Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah, I need to see the first Fantastic Beasts
before
Grindelwald.
You've never seen the first one? Yeah, you should probably. I think you're gonna need to see the first one before Grindelwald.
Well, yeah, because when it first came out, I thought it was like, oh, here's like one movie, a knockoff. Like, oh, I don't really care. I don't like Eddie Redmayne that much. And then they're like, oh, there's gonna be four more after this, and I'm like, why? And then they're like, oh, oh.
Yeah,
this is the Dumbledore Grindelwald gay fucking romance,
dude. I
vehicle.
Hope so. Oh, I fucking hope so.
They have
I
to.
I want to see
they
Jude Law. Dude, if Jude Law and Johnny Depp just like make out hardcore in this fucking movie,
well, no, because isn't the story that when they were kids, like they were
lovers?
Like,
yeah,
yeah.
They were lovers when they were kids, and then, you know, it was frowned upon and they ran away, and then Grindelwald developed a resentment for the world because of how the world viewed their relationship, but Dumbledore was more accepting of it. He's like, hey, maybe they're just not ready for it yet. Like, you gotta calm down, dude. I still love you. Dude, I can't wait. I hope this movie's good, man. I really hope The Crimes of Grindelwald is good. Like,
hey,
I wanna,
if it's not
I
good, there's
love
three
Harry
more
Potter
left.
Again.
Yeah.
I know.
The best thing about the Harry Potter movies, like, their special effects are amazing. Like, they've got such great production design. It is really like the Star Wars of like today almost, where you're like, you're getting people who are so inspired when they're kids. It's like,
oh yeah.
Oh, now I get to like make that stuff. Oh man.
Yeah. And the thing about Harry Potter that I think that no other franchise has really been able to do so far is just the fact that it matured with its audience. And I feel bad for like younger kids, like my little sister, who are into Harry Potter, but you know, they weren't there for like the launches of the new books. Like, I remember I was getting into it when the fourth book came out. So I was there for the releases of like 5, 6, and 7. And then when the movie started coming out, and just like, I think I graduated high school when Deathly Hallows Part 2 came out, which felt like such a capstone to my youth. That was so satisfying to have just that perfect timing line up for the Harry Potter franchise. And I just feel bad that, you know, younger kids getting into the franchise, as good as it still is, I don't think it's going to be the same for them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, who knows?
Yeah. Maybe Fantastic Beasts will do it for them. But, you know, to me, that's just an extension of the franchise.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Speaking of final thoughts on movies that that we're talking about,
it's not an episode without some big digressions.
Yeah, exactly. This is my final thoughts for mid-90s. Overall, a interesting movie, but not an essential one. Hits some notes. If this is on streaming and you're really into the 90s or skateboarding or Jonah Hill, check it out. If you've got nothing else to watch, but really not essential. I'm interested to see what Jonah Hill does next because of this. Like, it wasn't hot trash. It wasn't like, wow, no. So glad that he decided to do this. It's garbage. It's really like, I'm interested.
Yeah, I feel pretty much the same way. And I think I was coming off as more again negative towards it than I wanted to. But I think part of that, too, is because the hype around this movie, and especially for me, like, I was really excited for this movie. I really thought it was going to be something special, but again, it felt super underwhelming to me.
You're two for two for high expectations.
I know. I shouldn't expect this much from movies. That's the message I'm getting from 2018.
I should October just only, 2018 at least.
Yeah. Yeah. I should. Well, here's the thing. Netflix has actually been surprising me lately. So I have Netflix at least to look forward to.
Yeah.
But yeah, this movie, it's emotionally underwhelming. I don't think the direction is that unique. And I think overall, if I were to walk out of this movie and have one emotion that I want to distill it down to, it's probably that I just felt pretty empty after leaving this movie, which was pretty disappointing. There are great parts of it. Again, I think the soundtrack is great. I think the performances are great. But like you said, if this movie is streaming, I think it's worth a watch, but I wouldn't pay to go see it in theaters.
Yeah, I agree. Even a matinee price, I still felt like I was eating like a bread sandwich.
Yeah. Part of it too is just the fact that it was so short. Like,
yeah, it was short and it could have been 10 minutes shorter. Like,
yeah,
I felt like when there's a moment when Ray and Stevie are skating and they're going down the boulevard, and I was like, this should end right here. Like,
right.
Yeah. And they have this whole other like weird narrative like part of like, oh, we'll start tying like up some of these loose ends.
15 minutes.
Yeah. You're like, why are they doing this? It just makes me feel like weird. I don't know.
Yeah. And like, I want to talk about some shit, but you can't without spoiling the movie. So I won't.
Yeah, exactly. But so film wise, it might be a cool relic when Jonah Hill becomes a superstar director, but not as a flick. Yeah, it doesn't really do anything.
Same. I think as a flick, you're going to be kind of bored by the end of the movie. And I don't think you're going to be like, yeah. As a film, you know, like maybe it'll be Jonah Hill's jumping off point. Maybe it's going to be worthy of analysis later on, but we'll see. I think for now, just watch Lords of Dogtown instead.
Oh, my God. Yeah. What a better movie.
Yeah.
That does a lot of different. I mean, not even like an amazing movie, but
not even amazing, but it's stylish and it's engaging and the characters are people you can actually empathize with.
Yeah, this movie was trying to do Lords of Dogtown, but didn't get close.
Yeah. All yeah. Right.
Yeah. So that's it for us this week. What are we going to review next week, Robert?
Next week? What do we have coming out next week?
I think, is it Boy Erased or is it...
Oh, it's both. We're talking about Bohemian Rhapsody.
Ooh, you little.
And
Suspiria and Beautiful... Oh, wait.
Does Suspiria come out next week? Wide release?
No, it doesn't get wide release until... I don't think it's getting a wide release, actually. Huh.
I feel like it's getting a wide release. I think they're just slowly rolling it out.
Yeah, it's going
like
to be...
Like, I've seen marketing for that movie all around, at least in the Alamo Drafthouse. Like, they're really pushing this film. So I think it's going to be coming to the Draft House at least. I don't know about the other like Regal or AMC movie theaters, but.
Right. Well, here. So Suspiria is going to be in 250 theaters and Boy Erased is only going to be in 5 theaters. So I don't know if that's going to work.
Yeah. So then we're going to review Bohemian Rhapsody and The Night Comes for Us because you still need to fucking watch that on Netflix.
Yeah. Because I'm garbage. You know,
you are garbage.
All of our listeners know I'm garbage. We're garbage, whatever. Bohemian Rhapsody, I'm not that excited to see, but here
yeah,
we
me
go.
Neither. Hey, we could also review The Nutcracker and The Four Realms instead.
Oh god, that movie looks, it's like the Regal like sponsored movie, so every time I go to a Regal they're like, have this bland ass girl talk to me about how the Nutcracker is like, yeah. It's like, oh, she's like full of fight and spirit, and I'm like, not from these trailers, it does not look like that.
Yeah, what the fuck. Morgan Freeman is in it for some reason. I don't know if he's playing the Nutcracker.
I don't really know too much about the Nutcracker, but
yeah, I don't even know what like the story, the fairy tale of the Nutcracker is. So, but yeah, hey, it's gonna be in 3D.
Oh boy, it looks like the special effects are there. So,
I mean, it's Disney money, but man, that's all gonna be wasted. So Disney is gonna have the Nutcracker bomb. They already had a Wrinkle in Time bomb this year. Like, I feel like Disney's gonna
go bankrupt.
No. They're just going to give up on live action movies that aren't Marvel.
That's how I really want.
Or hopefully they just give up the public domain.
Yeah, really. Just leave the public domain alone. It's been through a lot.
Yeah. You're not good at rebooting this shit, especially with your Tim Burton-ass CGI fests.
Oh, yeah. I can't believe he did those movies.
I know. I was so excited for Alice in Wonderland 2. I thought it was going to be so...
Like the second Alice in Wonderland?
No, the first one.
Okay.
Although I did kind of want to see Sacha Baron Cohen in the second Alice in Wonderland because I love Sacha Baron Cohen.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
But apparently that movie's hot shit. And so was the first one. And boy, am I disappointed because I remember getting so hyped, being like, oh, yeah, this is Tim Burton returning to his roots. He's going to fuck up a fairy tale and give kids nightmares. Like... And it's not what it was at all. I was like, what the fuck is this? She's fighting a dragon on a chessboard. This is a video game. Why?
Yeah, this is a video game with worse graphics than an actual video game.
God.
All right. Well, enough digressions. I've been Dan Lee. I've been your A-host. And
yeah, you have been.
Yeah. Follow me on Twitter. I'm at the Dan Leo Show. I don't even post things anymore. I don't know, who cares? Social media is dead. Read a fucking book, America.
Yeah.
But not before you follow our podcast on Twitter, at Viewing Angles. And you know the website, viewingangles.com. We're on Spotify now. Didn't you know that? Follow us on Spotify. Listen to us. Yes. We get those good metrics. You know
also
you love that.
On YouTube.
We're also on YouTube. Somebody said that. Who knows? And what's another thing that I was going to say? I think that's pretty much it. Subscribe, rate, you know the whole deal.
Yeah, buy our merchandise. We have cool shirts now.
Yeah, Rob specifically designed some sweet ass merchandise for us. So
merch link in the bio.
Do we have the mugs yet? Did you design the mugs?
Yeah, I ordered a mug for myself. The mug is fucking hot.
Yeah, I'm gonna get the mug soon. The mug is the best, I think.
Dude, I'm going to get that mug. I'm going to bring it to work. That's going to be my only coffee mug at work. Everybody's going to follow Viewing Angles now.
Yeah, exactly. I want to get that shirt, but I don't know any people who speak Chinese. Actually, that's a lie. I know one person who speaks fluent Chinese. So,
well, for starters, it's not Chinese. It's Japanese.
Okay.
You piece of shit. But you probably don't want them to be able to speak that language. It looks so much cooler. It looks like a fucking Supreme product if you don't know what it actually says.
Do you have what it says in the product description?
No. Why would I give that away? If you want to find out what this hot looking shirt says, go find a fucking Japanese friend. go find one of your weeb friends and wear it to their house and tell you, like, have them tell you exactly what it says.
Yeah, that's where we're a very diverse podcast.
Exactly. I'll be putting,
that's why we're not getting to Harvard.
Every yep. We're no Brett Kavanaugh.
You got it. I think he went to Georgetown, you shill.
I thought he went to Harvard. I thought that was like his big thing. Is like, I got into Harvard and I didn't have any alumni there. Like, I thought that was his fucking beer speech.
Yeah. I'm sweaty and drunk. Yeah. Let me be the court.
I decide the future of this country.
Oh my god, what an asshole. God.
What a fucking piece of shit.
Yeah.
Oh man. But yeah, so in addition to the merch you can get, well, I'll make a Brett Kavanaugh shirt at some point. I don't know. I'll say something like fuck Brett Kavanaugh in Italian or something.
I think that'll be much more recognizable.
I don't think so. Italians are weird as fuck. I'm going to write it in pizza. But yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Robert Jr. JR. You can follow me on Instagram and Letterboxd at the same handle. And again, merch link in the bio. We're really trying to sell the shirt. We started this podcast to become the next fashion brand. So if you know Kanye West, please tweet our merch at him. I think he'd really like it.
Yeah, you know, he's fucking stupid, so probably like...
Exactly. You know, I'm going to make like a Rick and Morty reference shirt. He'll probably be into it. I know that's what he's into now.
Dragon energy!
Dragon energy, big dick energy. Slavery was a choice.
Chicken pot pie for breakfast.
Oh my god. What the fuck is 2018, man?
Yeah, we should start a meme review podcast.
Let's do it.
Actually, never mind. Pretend I didn't say that. I'm going to cut that out of the podcast.
Yeah, it's too bad you don't edit it.
Yeah. Ugh, tactical mistake.
Oops. Hey, right, buy a shirt and I'll let you edit an episode.
Okay. I will. I'll rip my own merch. Do we have hoodies?
Oh, I can make some hoodies.
I just want some weird ass hoodies.
Oh, we can get you some weird ass hoodies.
If Brockhampton can make some stupid ass hoodies that don't make sense.
Brockhampton can have a $55. Fucking $55 pregnant woman on their hoodies. Yeah, we could do that.
Yeah. All right.
What are Brockhampton's hoodies again? Like the You Matter hoodies?
Yeah, they're just like they're $55 and they say like iridescence on them and then that's it.
Yeah, we can
$55. Yeah.
We can do better than that. They're making like $40 off each hoodie. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, they're making their hoodies in their garage, so.
I don't believe it.
Yet. What? All right. Well, let's wrap it up. All right. I've been Dan Leo. You know me. Thank you, viewing anglers or viewing angels, whatever the hell we want to call you guys.
Viewing angels.
Yeah. Everyone is tuned out by now. Everybody is off. They're like, oh my God, they're doing this thing again.
Stop riffing. Close the podcast.
Stop riffing. Please end it. Holy shit. We got to start getting some promo codes.
Yeah, if you go to the Viewing Angels merch shop, enter in the promo code $10 off tee. Nothing's gonna fucking happen.
I was half expecting that you had some promo code in your. Oh,
dude,
ass.
I wish. There's nothing up there. It's waiting to be filled.
Alrighty. Speaking of that, fill your heart with love and other drugs. Alright, well, alright, let's do the thing.
All right. Let's do the thing. Yeah. The bye thing?
Yeah, the bye thing.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye!